The BBC presents My Music, a radio panel game devised by Edward J. Mason and Tony Schreier. And here's Steve Race to introduce the teams.
Welcome to My Music. The contestants in our panel game being, as ever, Ian Wallace and Dennis Norton, competing against John Amos and Frank Muir. It so happens that all the music in this first round has something to do with fire. The question is simply, what connection? Ian Wallace, what has this to do with fire?
What indeed?
This yes. Is modernish.
Yes, modernish. This century just. It's going to take a long time, folks.
Well, the team on the opposite side have got very indulgent smiles on their face. They know it.
One of them does. I don't think. Well, perhaps the other does.
I saw John Amos conducting it the moment it started, which is always a good sign.
The word. Remember, I said there's a connection with fire, and fire comes into the title actually.
Oh, into the title.
Yes. In your case. I think I can't wait
fire.
Any.
Firebird?
Yes.
Well done.
Half a mark out of one. All right, I did lead you to it, rather. Yes, it's from the ending of Stravinsky's ballet, The Firebird. And half a mark, I think, is generous, but I must be generous to the other side when the time comes.
Well,
Dennis?
I know fire down below, and I know ritual fire dance.
Careful.
Right, won't help you this time. Dennis,
well, with any luck, you might get one of those, too, Dennis.
No, Dennis, yours is music for a bad day in Georgia. Listen. Picture the scene, Dennis, and you
it's
may...
It's film music, is it?
Yes, that's right, very much so, with that vibrato in the strings. Yes.
Is it Max Steiner?
Yes, that's right. And
well,
the film...
then I would think it's Gone with the Wind.
Yes, it's The Burning of Atlanta, Georgia. Ah, yeah. I did say A Bad Day in Georgia. One lovely crisp mark for Dennis, very good. Max Steiner for Gone with the Wind. John, what has this to do with fire? John.
Is it 19th century?
Yes. Yes, early.
Operatic?
No.
Symphonic poem?
Balletic.
Balletic?
Yes.
The libretto was by Bram Stoker.
That would be a lovely fire connection. I can't allow that, I'm afraid. If you knew the title, you would know the connection with fire. Well, I must tell you, the title is Beethoven's Prometheus... The fire connection, of course, being it was Prometheus who stole fire from Olympus and gave it to us poor humans. So I can't give a mark there. But, Frank, you can redeem your side by telling me what is the fire connection here?
That voice I kiss you, my heart is yours completely. If I'm a slave, then it's a slave I want to be. Don't pity me. Don't pity me.
Louis Armstrong.
Yes, the title of the song is the answer.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
It's a case of don't know it, I'm afraid. John.
Well, yes, I'm afraid it is, really.
Yes. Anybody in the audience know what it's called?
The one in Latin American, please.
What's it called, that song?
Fuego.
No, it's not Hernando's Hideaway, sir. Nice of you to suggest it. It's Kiss of Fire. Kiss of Fire by Louis Armstrong. No mark there. Still, plenty of time to go. And some miscellaneous musical questions based on musical terms in other languages. Ian Wallace, what would it mean if you saw written at the top of a piece of music, Smortsando? Smortsando.
Smortsando.
Or for that matter, morendo or mancando.
It's one of those things that singers like, particularly at the end of a bit of music, to sing rather loud.
Ah, you got it. It means...
But when you smortsando, you're sort of dying away.
Yes, fading away, exactly. Just one mark to you, just as I said.
No, you never get as good an applause for something that's fading away. That's why singers don't like it.
Always like to end summertime on a loud, high note.
That's it. All the time.
Yes, smortsando, morendo, mancando, fading away. Dennis, what would it mean if you saw, written at the top of a piece of music, Semprini?
Well, it probably doesn't mean what I think it means, but it would either mean that the music belonged to somebody called Semprini, or it could have been written by somebody, a very scholarly chap, and the music belonged to the two Semprinos brothers.
It's the Semprini. Well, it could have been borrowed from the Semprini Public Library,
yeah,
didn't it?
That's
right. Property of Semprini the pianist is what I was after, gets you a mark. John, what? Sorry, Frank.
Oh, they're tricky questions.
Ah, well, you never know. John, what does tre corda mean in music?
Tre strings.
Yes, and that really means what?
It means that you put it down on the left hand foot, and it damp all of the three strings, if you've got three strings on your piano. It makes a nice, quiet noise.
You got it wrong way up.
Eh?
You've got your soft pedal the wrong way up. It's the soft pedal of the piano.
I'm left-handed.
Let's get it. What about... Yeah, let me try. Una corda and tre corda. Which is which?
Well, una corda is one string.
Yes. And which
and
is...
tre corda is three.
And which is with the pedal down and which is with the pedal
oh,
up?
I beg your pardon. Yes, una corda is the softer one.
Yes, that's right. You raise the soft pedal for tre corda. Yes.
Alexander corda, Zoltan corda.
Frank, what would it indicate if you saw rigatoni on a piece of music?
Rigatoni. Well, it's a musical expression meaning a kind of inertia which descends on things like rigor mortis. So you play it immobile and...
Yes.
Am I warm?
Well, rigatoni on a piece of music would suggest to me a careless Italian waiter because rigatoni is a kind of pasta. But your answer's perfectly adequate for a mark.
Oh.
Back to the top again. All you have to do in this round is to sing one note. Or perhaps two. But it has to be the right note at the right time. The note that immediately follows when the music stops. Ian, can you please supply the final note here?
Tote that barge, lift that bale, get a little drunk, and you land in jail.
Yes, that's right. Don't let them tell you you can't sing a bottom E flat. You can.
Well, I'm very surprised because Paul Robeson usually starts about where most of us leave off.
The interesting thing is he makes it sound low by having that timbre of voice, doesn't he?
What a bore.
Well, that was Frank. Dennis, there's a mark to Ian. Dennis, can you listen, please, and then add the final two notes to this?
Yes, there were times I'm sure you knew.
No way.
All right.
You must be out of your Chinese mind. That was...
Shirley Norden.
Bessie Profundo.
One mark to Dennis, why not? John, in your case, it's the last sound rather than the last note.
That's easier.
And they shout as they run, he's an excellent son and a wonderful fellow, we're sure. But oh, oh, what a bore he is. What a thundering thumping down in the dumping. Thumping
ball. I think on the whole I would prefer, Ian, would you give it to us? But you, what you gave us, John, was...
Well, my dear chap, I was trying for a cymbal crash.
It's rather nice for the composer's one. I don't think I can allow that. You should have given us a snort. Half a mark out of
no,
one.
But no, a very good Donald Swan
impression. Yes, well, it was.
If,
right,
I,
then
if
the full,
I had thought yeah. of that, when I would have, I'm sure I'd have done that yeah. instead
the
of
full,
doing...
The full mark for the Donald Swan impression, yeah. that's right. Yeah. In fact, we can afford to give him a half mark extra, mm. shall we?
Yes,
a bonus was 1.5 marks out of one. Right. I had a reminder to myself to be generous to the other side, and that's it. Frank, final note, please, of this.
You
think a mark, members of the audience, do you? You think a mark for that, yes.
That's all right.
Yes, so mark to Frank there. Actually, on the record we heard, Leontine Price takes two bites at that particular last note cherry, as demanded by the Italian words, like this. I think I preferred Frank's version. I have under my desk two objects which I found when going over a musical instrument factory. The first of them, which I now produce, consists of 20 strands of fine coiled wire clamped in a parallel position, the whole thing measuring about 12 or so inches by 1.5. Dennis, I pass it to you first. What would you say this is used for?
That's a chest expander for a midget soprano. I think I know what it is. But
very true, yeah. Actually. But two marks to you for that. Ian, can you tell us what it really is? Because that's...
Yes, it's one of those things that they put on a drum to make a rather, well, a sort of metallic kind of sound. Yes. It's a snare.
It's the snares from the lower head, actually, of a military drum in that case. Its vibration makes the buzzing noise that results when you tap the top head of the drum. Yes.
Don't give it to me.
It goes zzzzzz and you tap it, and that's two marks to you, too. The second object I have for you consists of a metal rod, which is expandable, and has a very sharp prong on the end. The whole thing's, what, just under 2 feet long, I should think. Can I pass it over again? So kind, just pass it over. Frank, what would you be inclined to use that for?
this is extremely well known, in fact. It's the bit that slides in and out is actually marked off in inches. When it came from young John Barbaroli, before he was third, and when he was conducting vigorously with his baton... He used to strike the leading violinist around the face. And the leader of the orchestra was lacerated with blows from the baton. It was all right with other conductors who used softer things like spring onions, but John Barbaroli used a long, sort of 2-foot prong. And I think it was a lady harpist who said, why don't you use a telescopic baton? And then when you're conducting wild works and you've got to wave the thing around a bit, you see, you won't actually destroy the first row of the orchestra.
Push it in, collapse it.
So you see, when the Halle now plays on bandstands and things, where there's not much room, you feed that in. And when they're playing in large halls, they can extend it, and the conductor can wave away to his heart's content.
What a good point. What a good answer for 2 marks. John, would you like to give a version as to what you think it is?
I just think it's something you put on the end of a double bass to keep it steady.
No, come down a bit in size.
Cello.
Yes. You fit it into the bottom of a cello and you stick its point into the platform or the carpet, if your hostess permits. It's adjustable for height, of course, because cellists come in different sizes. There we are. And leading at the moment, this stage of the game, by 1 mark, and only 1 mark, are Ian Wallace and Dennis Norden. The music heard in this next round concerns a great choral tradition. Ian, the record you're about to hear was made near enough 50 years ago, so it's a bit primitive, technically speaking, but musically it's fine, and it should make you think of a city and an island. 1 mark for each. City and an island.
Well, the city certainly is Glasgow,
yes.
Because that is the absolutely unmistakable sound of the Glasgow Orpheus Choir.
That's right.
Island?
The island I can't name, I'm afraid.
Oh, it's the title of the song, actually.
Yes, I imagine so. But
Dennis, you don't happen to know, do you?
No.
The Isle of Mull.
Ah,
that's Glasgow Orpheus Choir, it certainly was. So 1 mark out of 2 there. Dennis, for you, a literary question in the middle of this musical quiz. Who wrote the words for this beautiful song, and roughly when did he live?
On good, if scribbled, authority, that it's Ernest Thiemann. But isn't it a lyric?
No, it isn't. No, the music is by Eric Thiemann.
That's who I meant.
Yes, but it's...
But it's T-H-I-M-A-N.
Yes, but it's the words I asked for. Who wrote the words?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Where did he live?
And Go Lovely in... Rose is a...
Yes.
Is I know in the Oxford Book of English Verse, he's round about Milton. So he's round about... 17th century restoration round
very good, yes. He was born 1606, died in 1687. So that's 1 mark out of 2. You're certainly right. The name was Edmund Waller. Edmund Waller, who wrote Go Lovely Rose. A turncoat, time server, and place seeker.
Wait a minute.
You know about him?
Yes. I think every writer knows about him because he made one of the best retorts ever. He wasn't a time server and a placekeeper. He had to earn his living, as we do.
Same thing.
And so he wrote some very, very flattering poems about Oliver Cromwell, about the virtues of Oliver Cromwell. Then when Oliver Cromwell left and Charles II came in, he wrote equally flattering verses about Charles II. But Charles II said to him that the flattering verses that he wrote about Charles II's virtues were inferior to the ones he'd written about Oliver Cromwell's, to which he replied, "Sire, a poet succeeds better in fiction than in truth."
That's right. Very nice excuse.
He says that, he's more than a time server.
Touch of the Vicar of Bray. Yes, so very true. And the name was Edmund Waller. You have 1 mark out of 2. John, can you have a stab at guessing the years, respectively, in which the Glasgow Orpheus Choir was founded and disbanded?
I should think it was disbanded round about 1945.
No, later.
Disbanded? 1955?
No, earlier.
1950?
A little later.
Two?
No.
One?
Earlier. One, yes. And for your other mark, when was it formed?
50 years, 1901.
Yes. I think that's good enough. Don't you think it's good enough? Good enough for the side that's trailing for two marks. Yes.
I feel like
as Sir Hugh Robertson retired, so did the choir in 1951. They
I
retired.
Feel like a guided missile.
Yes, he did. Frank, the Glasgow Phoenix Choir rose from the ashes of the Orpheus. Whether better or worse was no doubt a matter of local opinion. Here's the Phoenix Choir. Two marks to you if you can make out any four words that they sing. Any four words?
Yeah. Was, was all the opening.
Farns, Barnes and Tibblesdale. You
exactly,
that's right.
Yeah. March was in there.
Yes. March was in there four times, actually, which I thought...
Well, that's four, isn't it?
Any other words from you?
Not in the Oxford English Dictionary.
Yes. Ian, can you help us, I wonder, without preparation?
I would have said it was March, March, Ettrick and Liddesdale.
Ah, yes.
The border ballad.
And then something about over the border at the
yes,
end.
Yes, yes, that's right.
How many marks, audience, do you think Frank deserves out of
no.
two? How many are they leading by at the moment?
Half.
Are we not much in it. I think one out of two, don't you? One for ingenuity. Fair enough. Right, one out of two. I haven't even looked at the marks. And so to our own Orphean quartet, Dennis, John, Frank and Ian in that order. In other words, the singing round, the singing answers, which we always end the programme with. All four songs this week are in some way connected with nighttime, gentlemen, nighttime or dreams. Dennis, I'll play you on the piano the middle bit of a one-time popular song. See if you can pick it up for the last phrase. This is complete with the words, of course. Here's my bit.
And maybe tonight I'll hold... No. I was there. That was. And maybe tonight I'll hold you when the moon is bright.
My dreams are getting better all the time.
Yes, two marks. Yes. My dreams are getting better all the time. John, two marks to you if you can remember the words as well as the tune of I Love the Moon. I think this might be your key. Mm-hmm.
I love the moon, I love the sun, I love the forest, the flowers and...
But amazingly enough, the sun.
I like the wild birds, the dew and the dawn, but best of all...
Bravo from your family in the audience, John. Great stuff.
Talk about Anne Ziegler and General Boone.
It's like 42nd Street. You know that line where Warner Baxter says, "You came in here an unknown and you'll walk out a star."
More like a Ringo star.
Two marks and you nearly got the words right, John. Near enough, I think. Frank, from you, please, a harvest moon.
Shine on, harvest moon.
You'll be sorry.
No, nothing.
Okay.
I ain't had no loving since January, February 1947.
Yeah. Yes, fair enough. Shine on, Harvest Moon, for 2 marks. Why not? Ian, finally, Liza Doolittle's Daydream from My Fair Lady. Wouldn't it be lovely? From, you know, I think, the middle bit. Round about there.
I would think that would be the middle bit,
yes,
you
please.
Want.
Yes,
do the actions as well.
Oh, so lovely sit and absolutely blooming still. I would never budge till spring crept over the windowsill. Someone's head resting on my knee, warm and tender as he can be. Who takes good care of me? Oh, wouldn't it be lovely, 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 lovely.
Time it was my turn to be unrehearsed. Terrible chord near the end. I apologise for that. I've got a couple of lovelies missed out in my memory. Nevertheless, there it is. Lovely if we had more time, but we haven't, I'm afraid. It's not a victory this week for anybody at all. It's a tie, ladies and gentlemen. A tie.
Goodbye.
Taking part in My Music were John Amis, Frank Muir, Dennis Norden, and Ian Wallace. The questions were compiled by our chairman, Steve Race, and the program was produced for the BBC by Tony Shryan.
You've been listening to My Music from the BBC, heard each week at this time. This is the WFMT Fine Arts Network.